Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Why Some Animals Eat Their Young, A Survivor's Guide to Motherhood by Dallas Lewis, narrated by Tiffany Morgan. Chapter 1. Get a Puppy. Our old vacuum cleaner was acting up more and more as of late, so I decided to go hunting for a new one. I had two dogs, a big, fluffy, shed-all-the-time golden retriever named Charlie, and a small, curly-haired, I-think-I'm-a-big-dog miniature dachshund named Faith. The dogs alone provided ample fodder for a vacuum to gobble up, but my three children were actually the most devastating for the brush and fan belt. Infomercials, especially the ones late at night, can make you believe that this brand of machine is, in fact, the only one that can rid your home of all traces of dust, allergens, and mites that might be contemplating building a tiny city within crevices of your new-age shag carpeting, all the while holding a 10-pound cinder block with its awesome suction power. This vacuum can do it all. Well, late at night, or actually, at 4 in the morning, it sounded amazing, so I bought it. Once I got it home and began using it, I was impressed. Disgusted, but impressed. I was surprised that my Charlie girl had any fur left on her body, judging from the sheer amount of it that collected in the canister of my completely sealed and allergen-contained canister. Gag. To be honest, I fully expected the dog hair. In a house with two dogs in Houston, Texas, there will be shedding. My shock and awe moment came when I moved to the couch. After adding the wand to the end of the nozzle, I started to fish in between the cushions. I was, of course, met with immediate resistance. My first treasure was a black sock that belonged to my 14-year-old. Then came the delightful sounds of coins sucking their way from the bowels of the sofa through the winding hose until they finally ended up in the cyclonic tumbler, where their raucous clanking assaulted the ears of everyone in the house. I retrieved 4 more socks, none of them matching, 2 tissues, 5 rubber bands, 3 bobby pins, 1 Q-tip, 1 string cheese wrapper, 1 ballpoint pen, enough Charlie hair to knit a sweater, an iPhone charger, not the wire, the plug part, and a partridge in a pear tree. The final change count was 81 cents in small coins. By the time I finished, an audience had gathered. Charlie had deemed this activity playtime and was happily chasing the vacuum cord and the hose. She wasn't afraid of the horrific sounds emanating from this demon machine, but the cranking of the Suburban in the garage sent this 65-pound dog diving for the shelter beneath my bed. She didn't fit. All 3 of my children, plus Faith, who, incidentally, is afraid of the vacuum, had lined the stairs, their sweet little faces looking at me through the spindles on the railing as though they had never seen anything like this before. Meanwhile, I was sweating like I had just run a marathon. One of them said, "Mom, what in the world are you doing?" I tried to speak, but no words came out. The concept of chores had somehow, somewhere along the way, been lost on my pampered offspring. Here I was, slaving, sucking up their socks, their rubber bands, their trash, and a whopping 81 cents when a thought occurred to me. I know why some animals eat their young. A few years ago, I ran away from home. I realized that I might be a tad too old to officially play that card, but due to circumstances totally outside my control, it was unavoidable. You see, I had lost a battle with my children. I knew it would happen one day, but the war was far from over. Every good general needs some time to regroup for her next plan of attack. It was during my regrouping phase that my husband, Jeff, sensed that the children were mounting a substantial rebellion. So he packed me up and sent me to California to visit my parents and sisters. What caused such a dramatic exit from my life? A plastic cup. Yes, you heard that correctly. A plastic cup. My 8-year-old daughter Emma had left her cup from dinner on the table overnight. This wasn't just any plastic cup. This pink-speckled cup, along with its matching blue twin brothers, had been in our house for years. They were microwave and dishwasher safe. They were sandbox safe. They were puppy safe. I am almost certain at least one or all had been run over by the lawnmower and my truck. Still, safe. Until that morning. I'm a very early riser. I prefer a 4 a.m. wake-up call because that's the only time of day my house is quiet and peaceful. On this particular morning, as I made my way rather sleepily, no one pops out of bed wide awake to the back door to let out the dog, I stepped barefooted in something wet, and my eyes flew open. Somehow in the night, this seemingly indestructible pink cup had mysteriously split in two places down both sides by itself, and the remains of my daughter's dinner milk was everywhere. It was in the grooves of my wooden table, in the chair cushion, under the table, and, as an added bonus, having used the grout of my kitchen tile as some sort of a superhighway, traveling distances I would have deemed impossible for milk to travel. It was all over the floor. But why was the cup still sitting on the kitchen table overnight? Well, Emma was very headstrong and believed things should be handled in a certain way. According to her, everyone in the house had to wait on her. Her brothers, her parents, not going to happen, and any grandparent or friend who might be unlucky enough to enter our home. Emma is in the middle of two brothers, and she suffered terribly from a disorder I have named Princess Syndrome. She developed it at a very young age. One of the symptoms of this disorder was her refusal to clear her plate after meals. She claimed to forget and would leave the table and all her items behind. Jeff and I decided to try a little experiment to see how long and how many dishes could accumulate at her place before she stopped forgetting and resumed normal and responsible behavior. But our brilliant plan backfired. At 4:30 in the morning of the first day, I found myself on my hands and knees mopping up curdled milk from the night before. Emma had won round one, and she didn't even know it. Throughout this book, I will introduce you to most of the members of my family, from the obvious, husband and kids, to the obscure, in-laws, outlaws, along with numerous friends and acquaintances. Right now, though, I'll just cover the basics. My husband and I have three children. In fact, we, and when I say we, I really mean I, had those children in 26 months. Let that sink in for a minute. Three kids, 26 months, no multiple births. Let me warn you, this isn't good for your body or your mind. Both will come out slightly worse for wear by the time all is said and done. Please do not misunderstand me. I love my children. I wouldn't trade them for anything. Well, except that one time during that 1 week when I traded everything and everyone for a plane ticket, some airline peanuts, and some much-needed rest and relaxation that landed me in sunny San Diego with my sisters. Since this book is about my young'uns, I suppose we should start with how they arrived. Parenthood can be planned. In many various and creative ways, you can decide when, where, and how to become a parent. In today's society, there's a virtual cornucopia of paths to choose from. Option number one, distance yourself from any and all traditional forms of birth control, pills, IUDs, condoms, and just let nature take its course. Option number two, buy books to assist with your education on charting body temperature that includes graphs for charting said body temperatures and instructions on how to interpret those charts. This option requires a bit more planning on your part. In my humble opinion, this option is exhausting, but eventually it should get the job done. Option number three, see a doctor. I know there are some sisters out there listening to this book who wish getting pregnant were as easy as charting body temperature. I get that. I understand, and I am not minimizing the struggle many parents-to-be deal with on a daily basis. My job is to add humor to where there may have been a vacancy. Option number four, catalogs. Well, maybe not this year's Amazon's annual Prime Day sneak peek, but option number four is the most intentional means of planning to parent in the world, adoption. Some women actually do wake up 6 months pregnant. I never did, but I hear it can happen. I have never heard of someone waking up halfway through an adoption. Adoption doesn't sneak up on you. It's a process that can take years and thousands of dollars, but in the end, you have a child you all but handpicked. Through every step and phase of these various forms of acquiring our babies, we read books, talk to people who have survived it, and, of course, watch TV. We build up in our minds the way we think having and raising babies is supposed to happen. We do this with the hope of trying to better prepare ourselves for the task at hand. What in the world are we going to do with these perfect little angels once we invite them into our hearts and bring them into our homes? Having lived through this initial stage of preparation 3 times, might I make a suggestion to any first-time trying to be mommies out there? Get a puppy. Puppies are cute, require a fair amount of attention, and give you unconditional love. Best of all, you don't have to birth them. If you get a puppy and still want a baby, continue on. That's what happened to me. You see, I wanted to be a mother from a young age. In fact, it was all I ever really wanted to be when I grew up. I dabbled with thoughts of becoming a teacher or a nurse, but the nurse thing went out the door as soon as I realized I faint dead away at the sight, mention, or mere thought of blood or bodily fluids. And teachers are probably the most underappreciated people on the face of the planet. So I reverted back to my original plan. Marry the man of my dreams and raise the picture-perfect family you find on TV, in the movies, or on the cover of magazines of Good Housekeeping and Family Circle. Had I known 20 years ago just how closely my family would actually resemble a circus, not a circle, perhaps I would have given more thought to the nursing school idea. I'm the oldest of 4 girls. There's a considerable age gap between my sisters and me, which gave me the opportunity to play house with them and actually use real babies. I dressed them up. I fed them. I even changed diapers. Lots and lots of diapers. I may have allowed 1 or 2 of them to roll off my bed just once or twice. Sorry, Mother. Now you know what's wrong with those 2. I was a built-in babysitter for my parents. But there's 1 big difference between babysitting someone else's children and rearing your own. I could always hand my sisters back to my mother when they proved to be too much of a handful for me. When caring for your own kiddos, you are always it. There's no second-string quarterback. I must admit, that thought didn't fully sink in until the hospital sent me home with my first child. By then, it was much too late to change my mind. This book is about how I survived after acting upon those basic urges to procreate. I'll share highlights of what happened in my world once Jeff and I brought home 3 kids in a time span that was barely long enough to build a house, let alone build 3 humans. I pray you find comfort in knowing that you aren't the only one suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or buyer's remorse. And yes, it's okay to admit that both of those conditions apply to parenting, although hopefully not all the time. I want to help you survive your own parenting journey, especially while your kids are little. Thankfully, my children have outgrown some of the antics found nestled within these chapters. They still do plenty of things to keep me on my toes, but at least I get to sleep through the night and I don't change diapers anymore. Parenting is truly one of the most rewarding experiences of your life, and when done right, it will also be one of the most heartbreaking. Our children need us to be more than friends, more than fun, more than cool. They need us to be their parents. So please, sit back, grab a cup of joe, and enjoy the trials and tribulations racing through my mind as I offer you a bit of hope and encouragement with some humor mixed in for good measure. Chapter 2. Dazed and Diapered. Jeff and I had been married about 6 months when I was bitten by the baby bug. I announced to him one evening that I thought we needed to start trying. In all his male wisdom, he blankly stared back at me over his dinner plate and asked, "Trying to do what?" "Duh." I explained that I was ready to have a baby and asked him for his thoughts on procreation. He didn't really have much to say, except that he knew what was involved in getting the little bundles of joy here, and needless to say, he fully committed to the process of trying. We had no idea what we had just done. At the time this conversation was taking place, every single couple we knew was having trouble getting pregnant. Every single one. I have to wonder if they were doing something wrong. It took us 2 months. I think we needed that second month only because we started trying near the end of my cycle. Turns out, getting me pregnant wasn't going to be the issue. Not keeping me pregnant was going to be the bigger challenge. When we saw two pink lines on the first home pregnancy test, I immediately bought every parenting and pregnancy book known to mankind. I was going to fully educate myself on the mysteries taking place inside my body. Oh, sure, I had taken biology in high school, but suddenly that seemed like a really, really long time ago. Unfortunately, those books didn't help much. In fact, they really didn't do much except scare the life out of me with all their warnings and horror stories about the 0.0000245.6% chance that my baby was going to be born her own sister because I had eaten sushi the week before I knew I was pregnant. Couple that with all the medication I was taking to ward off the extreme nausea and voila! He was also going to be armless and legless if he managed to arrive at all. I also bought my loving husband books on how to love your wife through her pregnancy, how to be a first-time daddy, and, of course, every first-time parent's Bible, what to expect when you're expecting, and what to expect the first year. I'm not sure Jeff ever opened those books, and I only skimmed them. I used them mainly as doorstops to hold open my front and back doors on those rare days in Houston when the humidity was low and temperatures cooperated. Books as big as those are quite capable of preventing doors from slamming shut. I found out quickly that not all men find the miracle of growing a human life inside of you, well, all that miraculous. I also discovered that the glow you hear about is nothing more than the sweat that glistens on your forehead after you have vomited for the 42nd time that day. For the record, I had that glow for 26 months straight. You could have used me as a nightlight. When I got pregnant with my first child, I was thrilled. Overwhelmed, but thrilled. When you're pregnant with baby number one, you have the freedom to envision how grand your life is going to be. Moreover, you have visions of the millions of things you are not going to do with your child. You keep a running mental tally of the scores of mistakes your friends are making with their little spawns, and you know full well that you can do better. Your child will not act like that in public. You will not offer a bribe to your child in lieu of proper discipline. Let's face it, with a baby in the belly and none to chase at home, life is good. Hormones make you hallucinate. When you are pregnant with numero uno, you have the time to obsess over how perfect little Junior will be as he effortlessly pops out into the world and you lovingly gaze into the eyes of your adoring spouse while your pre-pregnancy genes wait for you in your pre-packed hospital bag. Two words. Dream on. I am here to tell you all the things your friends won't and the things the other books are too afraid to print. Your favorite soap opera lies to you. All of those wonderfully beautiful women with perfectly round baby bumps? Very seldom does that happen in real life. Those women, A, aren't actually pregnant, B, have spent hours in hair and makeup because ratings would significantly drop if the producers put an actual pregnant woman on the air with the real pregnancy glow, and C, stay pregnant for 18 months with their brother's baby and then deliver a preemie. Coming back to reality. Your boobs will swell to the size of county fair watermelons while you're pregnant. I am not even kidding. Your husband will think he has died and gone to motorboat heaven until he discovers that he can't touch them because anything that swells that much that fast will hurt. After delivery, you may as well call the Guinness Book of World Records. With my first baby, Ethan, I went from a pre-pregnancy B cup to an after-baby double E cup. I thought Jeff's eyes were going to pop out of his head. I couldn't walk upright without a cane. These days, hospitals will keep you only long enough to ensure that you get the right kid from the nursery. Even with all the experience I had growing up, I was terrified to be sent home with our firstborn and nothing more than my dear husband for support. The nurses assured me that Jeff and I were smart and capable and could handle this. 3 days later, I proved them wrong. I mentioned earlier that I grew up with sisters. God has a wonderful sense of humor, making my first child a boy. As you may know, boys come packaged a bit differently than girls. In fact, boys come packaged a lot differently than girls. They have an extra appendage. These extra appendages require extra care. We had Ethan circumcised by our pediatrician in the hospital before we were released. She came in and informed us, very matter-of-factly, of the care and cleaning we would need to perform once we took our sweet baby home. I got very lightheaded. Jeff got very pale. Apparently, neither one of us would have made good nurses. To keep the circumcision nice, neat, and tidy, Ethan's doctor placed a ring around the tip of his penis. Over the next few days, this ring would fall off. We just needed to keep it clean. Sounds easy, right? Wrong. I blame it all on sleep, or lack thereof. You see, babies don't sleep. Well, they probably sleep more than their parents. Correction, they sleep more than their mothers. Babies are incredibly noisy sleepers. They make all sorts of grunts and groans that lead new mothers to believe that they are hungry, wet, or at the very least awake and must be tended to right away. Hear me when I tell you this. They are awake when they cry, not before. As a new mother, I didn't know the difference between a grunt and a hungry cry. I hadn't slept in a week. I now had sandpaper on the inside of my eyelids every time I tried to blink or close my eyes. That, dear friends, is an awesome sensation. When Ethan was hovering somewhere around a week old, he made a noise, so I got up. I changed his diaper and nursed him from one side. Side note on breastfeeding. In the beginning, nursing feels as though you have smashed your breast through a meat grinder, permanently stuck on the slowest speed with the dullest possible blade. I prepared to change his diaper again. Every time this kid nursed, he pooped. I was crying. Ethan hated having his diaper changed. He hated it. I can't explain why. Perhaps it was the cold air on his baby bum, or it was the shock of being undressed. Maybe he just didn't like me to put him down. Who knows? He would cry. He would scream. He would kick. He would pee all over me. On this particular night, my reflexes weren't as fast as they had been on previous nights. As he kicked, his heel caught the edge of the diaper, hooking the inside edge of the circumcision ring and pulling it halfway off. I screamed. Ethan screamed. Jeff, who up to this point had been peacefully sleeping 5 feet from all of this activity, almost had a heart attack. Here's the deal. Every night since we brought Ethan home, Jeff had slept through all the feedings, diaper changes, and breathing checks, only to greet me each morning with uncircled eyes and a smile. How'd the baby do last night? But this one night, he couldn't ignore. I was absolutely hysterical. Ethan was peeing all over the place. I was screaming, "I broke him! I broke him!" Jeff was delirious. I had awakened him from a dead sleep. That amazes me even now, 20 years later. We had to take off the ring. Well, Jeff had to take off the ring. I couldn't do it. It was awful. He manned up and did it. Ethan survived. Amazingly enough, all was still intact. I nursed him back to sleep, and we made it through the night. Funny thing, though, I didn't sleep for another 3 years. Sleep is overrated. I prayed for a girl the next time around. I was thankful that Ethan was a record-holding nurser. The kid could feed. I was never really one of those mothers who follow all the experts about only feeding every 2 hours or 4 hours or whatever the latest and greatest rule on the street said. I'm not so sure any of those so-called experts have ever held a baby, let alone have had children of their own. I didn't know exactly how much milk Ethan was getting. I didn't have hash marks on my breast measured out in ounces, although some strategically placed stretch marks would have helped. The bottom line was this. Whenever he seemed hungry, I fed him. I found out that I could do a lot of things with one hand that I previously thought required two. I could eat with one hand. I could make a bed with one hand. If the need was really great, I could go to the bathroom while nursing a baby. This kid loved to eat. I was his favorite meal ticket and pacifier rolled into one. That made it all the more strange when he quit nursing cold turkey at about 5 months old. I wasn't sure what to make of it. He was growing. He was healthy. He was eyeing the mashed potatoes around the dinner table, so maybe he was just hungry and wanted people food. I was disappointed that he didn't want to nurse anymore. I'd had plans for our first baby, big plans. His little life was all laid out. I was going to nurse him for a year, or so I thought. That was what was best for him. Everyone said so. And I really enjoyed breastfeeding. Well, once I got over the first couple of weeks of sheer agony, I loved the bonding time, the cuddle time. It was special. About 6 weeks after Ethan decided he was done nursing, it dawned on me that Aunt Flo hadn't paid me any visits. I wasn't too concerned. Perhaps my system needed a bit more time to adjust. 2 weeks later, and still no impending visit from my aunt, I called my doctor. He advised me to take a pregnancy test. Why? I had just had a baby and just finished nursing that baby. There was no way I could possibly be pregnant. I was wrong. Apparently, using breastfeeding as a form of reliable birth control is an old wives' tale. You absolutely can conceive while nursing. Here's the kicker. Ethan knew it before I did. The influx of hormones into my system due to the conception of his impending little sister changed the flavor of his food supply. That's why he quit nursing cold turkey. He didn't like the taste of the milk anymore. So we were going to have another baby. Super! They were going to be close. Really close. Really, really close. Ethan would turn one in August, and baby number two would arrive in October. You do the math. When Jeff and I celebrated our first wedding anniversary, I was pregnant with Ethan. When we celebrated our second anniversary, I was pregnant with Emma. I just hadn't figured it out yet. Having only dated for 7 months before we got married, I realized that at this point, Jeff had known me longer pregnant than not pregnant. Thankfully, he doesn't spook easily. I wasn't what most people would call a peach while pregnant. I didn't throw knives or spit fire, but my body simply didn't handle the whole thing very well. I could get pregnant, no problem there. I was just among some of the sickest folks on the planet while I was cooking those little honey buns. The sicker I got, the more dehydrated I got. The more dehydrated I got, the more often I had to make a run to the hospital for fluids. Fantastic. That cycle bumped me right up into the high-risk category. Remember the glow? I had that eerie shimmer all the stinking time. Jeff and I didn't have any family nearby during the first year and a half of our marriage. That made it harder for me to deal with the challenges of a difficult pregnancy with Emma while trying to chase down an active infant. My parents lived in Austin during this time, a solid 2.5-hour drive from us, and were busy with their two restaurants and my three little sisters who were still in middle school and high school. All my in-laws lived out of state, including my mother-in-law, Carol. Her permanent address with the post office listed a home just south of Chicago, Illinois. But after the birth of her first grandbaby, her heart found it more and more troublesome to stay out of Texas. She kept American Airlines in business during his first year as she...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?